Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 9th of February, 2021. And we have a market that is new all-time highs, although pretty low energy session yesterday, Peter. We've got a number of themes to discuss today, but one of the, and I've got that slide on slide one, the S&P 500. We can see we've etched a new high here, and actually the broader market relative to the NASDAQ 100, I think has actually proceeded quite nicely to the new highs, but the MACD, not quite there yet. So a little bit of divergent momentum, although this hasn't really meant anything in recent parts of the cycle. And that's a natural thing that happens when you have a volatile drawdown like we saw over this short squeeze event. You can see that on slide two. But Peter, the big news that was really getting this space excited yesterday was the Tesla news, if you want to call it news. It was news, of course. Elon Musk announcing that the company had invested $1.5 billion in Bitcoin. And this set the Bitcoin and crypto space on fire. And he even said something about accepting Bitcoin as payment for cars. I mean, I think we need to...
That will never happen.
We'll have to calm our take on this a little bit, but I wonder if this is maybe some sort of peak Musk moment, a little bit of hubris here. If you, you know, that's my view on things here, but what's your take on this?
Okay. I said never. You should never say never in the business circle of life, but I don't think it's possible in the foreseeable future for Tesla to take payment in Bitcoin for cars sold. That's, I think, for now, a marketing stunt with so many of the other things that he has made, PR stunts over the course of the past 5 years with, you know, we would have, you know, self-driving cars within a few years. It was actually not a very hard problem. He's been very arrogant in those matters. But you're right. He added 1.5 billion of Bitcoin, and that came after, I would say, 1-2 months of a lot of PR and positive drumming up cryptocurrencies in general. He even had a Bitcoin logo, as I've been told on his Twitter picture, and that was removed yesterday when he announced it. Probably there's some lawyers at Tesla that said we don't want to have too many discussions with the SEC again. So please stop. I think the Forbes article, which I have put in on slide three, is a pretty good indication of my own view. So I think it's a pretty dangerous bet he's putting on here for Tesla. You could also see the share price was actually down a little bit yesterday in extended trading. If you take the underlying volatility of Bitcoin, then, you know, mathematically or in probability terms, it's pretty likely with a high probability that Tesla could experience a 30 or 50% decline in its Bitcoin holdings. And if they're not actively managed, that would be potentially a $750 million loss right there to the bottom line. Given the how slim the bottom line is right now at Tesla, I'm not sure that that's a comfortable position for any CFO or investor. I mean, if investors wanted Bitcoin exposure, they would buy Bitcoins. They want Tesla, the pure bet on solar and EVs. Enough to talk about that. I just want to highlight two things as well on staying with Tesla. So Steen sent around an article from Wall Street Journal, super interesting long piece. The battery is ready to power the world. Fascinating story. We'll do more on batteries. We did a big piece on batteries last year, which you can try and find on analysis.saxo under my name. Otherwise, we will be reiterating our battery theme this year as well. And then in that 10K filing of the Bitcoin holdings for Tesla, they also announced revenue, preliminary revenue, not audited, for 2020. And for the first time ever in the company's history, they're now generating more revenue outside the US, and the Chinese revenue was up 124% year over year.
That's very significant. And again, we don't want to batter Tesla to death here, but there are a couple of actually negative news items, one being the big recall where they're going to have to refit some of the screens for the older models, as far as I know. And then the Chinese regulator was out calling in Tesla for issues over its batteries.
And internal management, actually. They said that they needed to change some processes as well.
And also, just finally, on the whole thought, investing in Bitcoin and talking about accepting it, Bitcoin, the industry and the mining industry in particular, uses a lot of electricity. And here's a company that only got a accounting profit on subsidies from the public sector. So I think it's an interesting cocktail, to say the least. But enough about that. Alcia, let's take our listeners through the fixed income space. And we just saw something interesting yesterday. We saw just briefly the recap on Friday that we saw the weak U.S. jobs report, and then yields actually managed to come back in higher, but they rolled over pretty significantly yesterday, especially at the very long end where we tested the 2% on the 30-year. What are your thoughts on that? And then also you've got some thoughts on the break-evens here.
Yes, John. Well, at this point in time, it's very interesting to see the long part of the yield curve shifting higher. And the 30 years yesterday broke above a pivotal level, 2%, but failed to sustain trading above this level. I think that the big story in the yield curve, though, it's within the 10 years U.S. Treasuries. And as you can see in slide 4, in orange, you have the 10 years break-even rate versus in blue, the 10 years U.S. Treasury yields. And as you can see, the break-even, opposite. In blue is the break-even rate and in orange is the treasury yields. And as you can see, the break-even rate has accelerated since the coronavirus pandemic, and the 10 years yields are lagging 100 basis points behind. So basically, somebody has to give up, in the meaning that this gap should narrow. So it is either that the US Treasury yields are lagging the inflation expectations, or inflation expectations at this point are just too high. But I really believe at this point in time that is the first option, that Treasury yields need to rise. And probably we see some Federal Reserve intervention in this part of the curve, because the same thing doesn't apply for the 30 years yields versus break-even, because they are not so distant one from the other.
Yeah, and I guess all of this is part of the anticipation that inflation is going to become roaring in. That's why you'd have a break-even rate where it's at. So that'll be so key watching this going forward. But just staying on the 30 years, or going back to the 30s a little bit, I've got on slide 5, you can see how we sort of tested the 2% level, didn't quite take it out. We have some auctions this week, the 10-year U.S. Treasury auction tomorrow, and the 30 on Thursday. Will be very interesting to see the demand for those with all these inflation concerns. And then just a small note on the futures positioning, you can see on the lower right-hand chart there in slide 5, this is the CFTC's weekly futures positioning. So that this is as of last Tuesday. You can see that blue line showing the U.S. yields are going higher. And we've had a record short, and that's the black line, the positioning line, in the net non-commercial positions before, but now we have these new highs in yields. In other words, trending as these shorts had hoped, but with less participation, so the positioning is less extreme. This is sometimes in the past, there's no sure thing at all, but sometimes in the past, this less participation at a new extreme is maybe a warning sign that it's becoming softer. But certainly the fundamental story is, how on earth is the U.S. going to sell all these treasuries? How is the U.S. Treasury going to sell all these treasuries when they're issuing so much more than the Fed is buying? It would require U.S. savings rates to go up or foreigners to buy those. Regardless, we saw dollar yen, for example, shifting to slide 6, and the dollar broadly weakening quite notably. And dollar yen, it was quite technically nice with this test of the 200-day moving average and a really sharp turnaround. I think we'll need to see U.S. yields continue to be capped to a degree here. And personally, I'd like to see this chart really slam all the way down to 104 or so for me to believe that we're putting in a full reversal and getting back into that bear trend again in dollar yen. And I think across the board, the dollar's in a kind of a tactically uncertain spot here. We need to see some follow through in the selling to get the dollar bear back on track. And then also in the bond space or in the credit space, certainly I'll say we're talking about rising sovereign yields, and yet we have U.S. junk bonds where the actual yield, not just the yield spread, but the yield has actually gotten to a record low.
Yeah, John, the thing is that as inflation expectations and treasury yields are rising, investors are looking to build a buffer against rising inflation and yields. And the only asset within fixed income that provide that type of buffer is to be found within the junk space. So that's why we see spreads tightening to historic new levels and and we have seen the yield to worse, the average yield to worse of all the junk space falling below 4% for the first time in history. So definitely this is a new record.
All right, and then you have some thoughts on gilts. We've seen it quite a blowout in yields towards the longer end, but so far failing to take out, I guess, you know, in round yield terms, the zero spot 5% level on the 10-year you have for us on slide 8.
Yeah, like since last week, we have seen a huge sell-off in UK gilts following the Bank of England monetary policy meeting. And this was due to the hawkish remarks of the central bank. The sell-off continued this week, and we have seen the 10 years gilt yields rising above the upper trend line of the trading channel they've been trading since August until now. However, the yields failed to sustain trading above this level. And what is different is that yesterday there was a report coming from the National Institute of Economic and Social Research that pointed out that the UK economy will remain below pre-COVID activity until the end of 2023. So this goes against what has been forecasted and said by the central bank. And I think that tomorrow Bailey's speech should give more insight on what are his thoughts, if it's actually that hawkish regarding the economic forecast. But what does that mean for the gilts? Well, we can see a deeper sell-off if Bailey's continues to be hawkish, and if the 10 years yields break above 50 basis points, then they will find support at 65 basis points. Otherwise, we will see them retreating within their trading channel and trade between 27 and 50 basis points.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how these long yields continue to react to and whether we see this vaccination effort rolling out in economies recovering. Certainly commodity markets are assuming that things are going to continue to recover, at least in terms of demand and prices. You can see the Bloomberg Commodity Index we have on slide 9 and actually on slide 10 as well. And just a brief note, it's quite interesting to see gold. You can see that on slide 9, recovering that last little big dip that took us all the way below 1800. Although you've just got converging moving averages all over the joint. I think I need to see at least a move above, let's call it 1875 to get some upside interest started. And then the big line in the sand is up further, just under 2000. You've also got some thoughts on the commodity basket, Peter. We've seen just about everything recovering. The oil just never even dipped, really. And even things like iron ore, which has suffered a setback, rallying strongly again. But you're seeing the performance in the equity baskets as well here.
Yeah, the basket was up 2.4% yesterday. But the point of this chart here on slide 10 is basically to show that the last time we had global inflation of any meaningful levels was from the beginning of 2016 to mid-2018, when China really stimulated the world, and the Chinese or China PPI index was accelerating fast. And the point being here that you didn't have any push from the input cost side, so from the commodity side, driving this inflation. But if we get stimulus, which is bigger this time around on a global scale than what we had from China, combined with a major breakout in commodities and the help with input cost rise in commodities, then I think we have the setup we have been talking about on inflation. So I just want to point that out.
Yeah, and handing out checks to everyone is one way to get demand kicking into a higher gear for sure. And then any thoughts on earnings? Looks like today is a fairly quiet day, but a couple of interesting names later in the week.
Yeah, there's nothing really much to report. And I wrote about Mercado Libre in yesterday's earnings preview. So have a look at that on analysis.saxo.
All right, that takes us to the calendar. Lots of little items here, but looking tonight, there's a three-year auction in the U.S. It's highlighted, but it's really the 10-year tomorrow and the 30-year on Thursday, the big ones there. We'll be looking at the Chinese CPI and especially PPI numbers. That PPI figure is an important global inflation benchmark. Also tends to track the year-on-year changes, for example, oil prices, which have gone nearly vertical lately. We'll be watching that. And then the following day, also tomorrow, we have the U.S. January CPI and Powell out speaking. So those will be up tomorrow as well. And then keep in mind that the Chinese markets will be closing down on Thursday through Wednesday as they celebrate their New Year holiday there. It could mean, and especially I would think in terms of dollar, if we don't get it following through to the downside here, we could just be in for getting a bit mired down until after that after that has come and gone. For now, we thank you for joining, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.